Hi, everyone. This is Regina.
Hi, horse lovers. This is Lynn.
Hey, listeners. It's Heather.
Welcome to the Horse Industry Podcast.
Okay, listeners. I'm very excited today to have Colton Crystal with me. Hi, Colton.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
Good. So, Colton, you're with CCC Performance Horses out in Idaho, right?
We are with CCC Show Horses.
Oh, Show Horses. Sorry. Yep, I messed that up. So, CCC Show Horses. But despite the fact that you are CC, CCC Show Horses is not yours, right? You're the assistant trainer there.
Yes, I am the assistant. I've been working with Chris and Colleen Riedel for 7 years now, and I became the third C a couple of years back.
Okay. All right. Got it. So you are part of the C's. All right. Well, why don't we start off by just talking about you, where you're from, what got you into horses, and just tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah. So I am based out of Idaho. I was born and raised here. We bounced around a little bit. My family runs racehorses and rodeo horses for the most part. That's how I got my start in the industry. I was a wild barrel racer child for a long time. And then one day got a wild hair that I wanted to jump something. And thankfully, my family had a lot of off the track thoroughbreds just sitting around that needed a job. And I got some lessons, did some USEF stuff for a couple years, and then decided I wanted to go slow. And I tried the all around stuff. And that's kind of how I ended up on the path that I am.
Okay. And no one else in your family did this, right? They were all just into the rodeo and racehorses.
Yeah. So I'm a third generation horse trainer, but I'm the only one that's ever gone slow.
Okay. Tell us about the other horse trainers that were in your life.
So my mom still continues to train barrel horses and racehorses, and my grandpa as well. He was a jockey for years and then did the roping, the rodeo event type stuff, a little bit of cow horse back in the day.
Okay. Was everybody, you were always based in Idaho then?
Yes. My great granddad, who was the first trainer, I should say, was a farmer in eastern Idaho, where it's basically Alaska all winter. And we moved to the western side about the time I was born. And that's kind of how I ended up doing all of the stuff I'm doing now.
All right. And then so tell us a little bit about your transition then, or how you got into the jumping, the lessons you had, and then into the all around eventually.
So I rodeoed for my entire childhood, and I loved it. To this day, I still own the one horse I own is a barrel horse. I don't own any others right now. But I got a wild hair, like I said, one day, and I always thought jumping looked fun. And we had a little mini that we drove and did everything else with. And I jumped him over something that probably shouldn't have been jumped on a mini. But he went, we did it, we survived, and I thought it was fun. And after I wouldn't stop doing that, my family decided maybe it's time to get him some professional help, get some actual lessons, learn how to hold your legs and all that fun stuff. So we did.
Maybe put a helmet on, probably.
Exactly. So I took some lessons. Like I said, we always had some thoroughbreds that were retiring or switching gears that we were trying to sell. I did a lot of those when I was younger because I was used to galloping racehorses and I knew a lot of our horses at the time. So I was able to kind of transfer that over to starting them over fences. And we did a few of those for a while. I did a little bit of USEF stuff. And then I was a national judging team when I first started high school. And we made it to the nationals and we went to the Paint World that year. And that was my first year ever really seeing a true all-arounder. And I was thoroughly infatuated. And I came home and we took a little cow pony we had that was in the pasture. And he was my first all-around horse. And then once kind of grew out of him, we moved into the paint stuff. And I bought one that had kind of fallen through the cracks, didn't really know everything. And he and I kind of learned the all-around together.
Okay. And so did you start right away with doing the showmanship, the horsemanship, just doing all of it, the act and everything?
Oh, yeah. I went face first into it, not knowing at all what I was doing. I read my rule book and just tried to go with what I had and figure it out. And thankfully, there were a lot of great people around me at the time that were willing to help me and help guide me through that initial year and couple of years.
So were you starting out at the like 4-H open shows or did you go right to the paint shows?
I started out in 4-H for a while. I actually finished out my 4-H youth career just because I was a part of everything at that point in time. It was a good community. And I went from there to the open show circuit for a year or so. And I showed a couple quarter shows that year once I kind of figured out what was going on. And then we bought my paint horse the following year, and that's when I started showing APHA.
Okay. So what were some of the big moments that you had then with her?
Honestly, my favorite memory was at Scottsdale at the Copper Country show. I believe it was the first year that it was back in Scottsdale and they did it. And that was my first real big APHA show. And I'd been working really hard. I'd had a lot of great help. And the horse I had was not the most talented thing in the world, but he taught me a lot and he was willing. And the trail and the jumping were things that he could do, because I always say the pole is the great equalizer. Anybody can drag a log anytime.
That dang pole in the Western Riding, right?
Exactly. If I had a dollar for every time I've clubbed it.
Right.
But that first year I went down there, it was my first time showing him there, and I was reserve circuit in the novice youth trail, and there were 27 of us that year. And I will never forget that moment, because I was just hooked. It gave me that recognition that I felt like, okay, maybe I can do this. Maybe I'm not just some podunk rodeo kid. I can kind of kick it with everybody. So that was my first real big win with him. And then we went on to win some all arounds and some year end awards and whatnot.
Okay. Did your parents take you to the horse shows?
My grandparents usually took me.
Oh, I'm a grandchild too of horse people. So it was my grandparents that always hauled me around too. So that's super special.
My mom was usually busy with the racehorses, so my grandparents would take me.
Okay. And so were they kind of learning alongside you then about the all around?
Absolutely.
And they were okay with it?
Yes. I mean, my grandpa is an amazing horseman and just very talented in his own right, and like knows how to make one do just about anything. He can go play mechanic and fix anything that I could dream of. But none of us knew what we were getting into when we started doing the all around stuff. It was a whole different world from what we were starting with.
So then on from there, what happened next? Where did you go?
So after I graduated, I got in a pretty big accident. I was kicked by one that I had bought as a project horse and wasn't anyone's fault. I mean, just weird thing. And I ended up in the hospital for a week, came out of the coma, everything kind of got healed up, figured things out. And then I decided I wanted a new project. Sold the one that I got in the wreck with, and she's still doing great to this day. She's a steer heading horse now, and the people that own her absolutely love her. All is well there. So I got her sold, and I decided I wanted a more pleasure horse, because my first paint horse was very much stronger in the hunt seat. And I decided I wanted to give myself a chance to try the pleasure, because I'd never really liked it. It was always such a struggle for me, just mostly because it was hard for me and my horse both. And I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I was just riding my horse because it was fun.
Yeah. And that is a class that's pretty specialized. So if you're on a horse that's not their thing, yeah, it is. I've been on plenty of all around horses where it's like, you know, we can go in and hopefully maybe get our name called or something. But yeah, it's different than having one that can really do it.
Absolutely. So I got the chance to buy a mare named Double Dark Chocolate from Jeff Burley. I drove down, tried her out. He called me when I was 30 minutes away and said, she got cast in the stall. She's a little sore. What do you want me to do? And I said, well, I guess I'll just get on her for a second, see how we get along. And if it's a 5-minute ride and she's okay, then she's going in the trailer. And that's what it was. And we drove home that night through a snowstorm. And then I took a year as an amateur before I became a professional, showed her a lot in the pleasure, did a little bit in the horsemanship and the showmanship with her, and the hunt seat a couple times just because I felt like it, because my heart's in the hunt seaters. I learned that year. And the end of that year is when I met Chris and Colleen, and that's when I started for them. It was after our last show that year, and I started working for them right after that.
All right. So how long have you been with them now?
7 years now.
7 years. Okay. So what has it been like being an assistant trainer for 7 years? And talk a little bit about your role there and what you do for them and going to shows, and just tell us what it's like.
As anyone knows in the horse industry, you have your ups and downs, but it's been a great experience overall. They've really taught me a lot and really helped me learn the finer things and then other events. I had never been on a reiner. I had never been on a ranch rider. I had never worked a cow before. And they gave me the opportunities to do those things and also helped me find ways to go on and kind of pushed me forward in my riding abilities to help me help them, if that makes sense. But it's been really good.
So what do they specialize in? Because I've seen you do a little bit of everything, and you just mentioned reiners and cutters and stuff. So talk about their business and what they specialize in.
our running joke is right now, we do everything but play with dinner on the hoof. We have ranch riders, all-arounders, a lot of halter horses. Colleen's had great success in the halter over the years. Hunt seeders, I do the hunters and they help me with them. The working hunters, I should say. We kind of do a little bit of everything, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's pretty different than a lot of other training groups and trainers out there. They usually stick to one thing or one even breed, because you guys do both quarters and paints, right?
Yes, we do. And we actually have a couple Appaloosas now too. So all the stock breeds.
So are you ever home?
This winter was better than normal. We were trying to start earlier, but the storms did not allow us to. We just got back from our first show of the year, which was the Silver Dollar Circuit. And we're staying home for a couple weeks now until we go to our next show. We have a couple studs that we're standing and doing some reproduction as well. So kind of got all the things in the air at once.
Yeah. So they literally do everything there.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're a full service program.
Apparently. So you just need something, you know, where you can go.
Exactly.
All right. Well, talk to us about the 7 years that you've been an assistant trainer there. Some of the highs. I want to hear the highs. So talk about some big things you've done. It's not always about winning, but just tell me about some of the cool moments you've had in the last 7 years.
So the first one that comes to mind, I was really lucky that they trusted me to show at the Quarter Horse World Show for my first time ever at a world show. And I was in the Junior Hunter Under Saddle on a halterbred mare that went on a few years later to win the performance halter, became an AQHA champion. She did a bunch of things. She was a really cool horse. But the first time I ever showed up at a world show was at the Quarter World in the Junior Hunter Under Saddle. And I remember trotting in behind Beth Case and Kevin Dukes was behind me. And I was terrified. And
you were like a little sandwich there.
Oh, yeah. And I was a little nobody. I believe it was the second or third year that I worked for them. I mean, I was still learning how to even handle things at that point in time. I mean, I felt comfortable with my horse and my abilities, but just that first initial trip, and that mare showed like $1 million, and we ended up 10th overall. And that 10th place ribbon still hangs on my wall because it was such a cool feeling to feel like I was part of the pack. That was the first time in my life I ever remember feeling like I can do this. Like I really am good enough at this to do this and pursue it as a career.
That is so awesome. I know that feeling because when I was a young trainer, I took a horse to the Palomino World and took it in the Senior Western Pleasure. When I think about it now, I'm kind of like, what was I thinking? I was so dumb. I was like 20 and trotting in behind Kenny Lakins. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. And there were some other big names in there too. And I was so actually dumb. I didn't even know who some of these people were until like some of my trainer friends are like, oh my gosh, I was watching and I can't believe who you were in there with. But you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes you just got to get in there with the big boys, and that's the only way to learn, really.
It is. Sometimes you just have to dive headfirst into the shark pit and hope it works.
Right. And sometimes it does.
It does. This last year has been really great, too. I won my first world title when I was in the irons over fences at the Pinto World with the Spot Ones Only mare, which anyone that knows me knows that one's really special for me.
Okay. Why is that one so special?
She's just a really cool horse. When she came to us, I just clicked with her when we first started with her. And since then, I know when she's having a bad day, I can work with that one any given time. I can look at her from across the arena when someone's riding and telepathically talk to that mare. She's just one of the really special ones for me and always has been. So to finally be able to win a world title with her was really cool, especially when it was my first one when I personally was in the irons. We've had a lot of success with our clients and other people showing our horses for a while, but that was the first one. I was actually the one that got handed the buckle. So that was a really cool feeling. And then I was able to show the 3-year-old Western Pleasure Versatility for the first time this year at the World Show on a really cool little horse.
You got a cool prize in that class too, didn't you?
Yes. He ended up winning the saddle and showed his heart out for me. And he was a true maiden. He'd never been in the pen before showing. We'd hauled him and taken him places, but he'd never been shown. And we started with that pattern, and they changed the pattern a little this year. And you start with an extended trot down the center line of the Jim Norrick Arena. And I clucked him up and sent him down. And I don't think he had a foot on the floor the whole way down, just as brave and solid as could be, and trusted me the whole way through. And same thing with the rest of it. He was just so fun to show. And I've wanted to do that class for so long because it's such a cool idea that it was really cool to be able to finally do it and feel super prepared and have a great horse under me.
Yeah. And for our listeners that don't know about that class, why don't you tell us again what it's called and explain it to us a little bit?
They call it the 3-year-old Pleasure Versatility Challenge. And it comprises of a pattern class that's kind of a modified Western riding. You have walk logs, jog logs, lope logs. You have to spin both ways. And then there's 6 lead changes, I believe, in it. And then you step off your horse at the end of your pattern. You don't get to get back on until 5 minutes after the last person has gone. Everybody gets a 5-minute warm-up to go show a pleasure class. And then in the arena, you jerk your saddles off, brush them off, and show them in the halter.
That's awesome. I don't even think I knew all that was involved. I knew I had watched some of it, but I didn't watch the whole thing. That's really cool.
It's very much controlled chaos, and it's so fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. How many were in that class this year?
If I remember correctly, there were 15 entered originally. I don't remember how many were actually in the class that showed up because it's a pre-enter situation.
And so Blue Ribbon donates a saddle. Is it to 10th place?
To the 11th place horse. They pay through 10th and then 11th place gets a saddle. So I ended up 11th and I was not upset about it.
Right. Who cares? I saw that picture of you carrying that saddle out of the arena.
I just showed him in it for the first time this last week at the Silver Dollar in the Western All Around. It was the first time showing all the things. And it was a cool feeling to just be, oh, you get to wear your saddle.
Yeah.
Good boy.
That's awesome. What do you have in store for this year? What are the plans? Where is CCC Show Horses going?
We're going to show a lot in Utah, Washington, doing a little bit in Colorado this year. We haven't been down there in a while, and all of our clients kind of wanted to do something different. We'll be at the Level 1 Championship Show on the West Coast, the Zone 2 Paint Show, the Zone 1 Paint Show, Paint World, Quarter World, possibly NSBA, depending on what our clients decide we want to do. So we'll be on the road.
Yeah, I bet. So I got to meet you in Arizona at the Scottsdale show. It was the first time I met you, right?
Yes, it was. When I braided your tail.
Yeah, you did. You braided my tail for me. So you came and helped our trainer, and that was when I met you. And right away, I was like, this dude's kind of cool. So I'm glad that we've had the chance to get to know each other. And then I had you show my little all-around horse in the big hunt seat class, the 3-year-old hunt seat class at the World Show this year.
Which was super fun. I find it funny that we met because I was catch riding, and then I ended up catch riding your horse.
Right. Yes, exactly.
It worked out perfect.
It did. So tell me a little bit about, let's go kind of backwards a little bit and talk about your time spent at the USEF shows, which for our listeners, if you don't know, that's hunter shows where they're doing the jumping. I recently bought a new hunter horse, so I have a little piqued interest in that world. So I'd love to hear some more about your experience there.
It was complete culture shock for me going from the rodeo and racetrack world directly into USEF. Because when my family does something, we don't half-ass it. We jump head first in. And I had only lasted a couple years, and that's when I switched over to doing more of the breed show stuff. But yeah, I will never forget that first lesson when I had an angry old German woman, bless her soul. She taught me so much, and I can't remember her name right now, yelling at me to switch my diagonal. And I didn't even know what a diagonal was. And I mean, just that, and then going into those shows and everybody has tack trunks and rugs and everything going around. And I was just so in awe of everything because it was so completely different from running down the road, throw a hay bag up, tie them to the side of the trailer.
No, now they're in grooming stalls and...
Like I say, it was total culture shock for me. I loved it and I would love to get into it a little bit again because I do miss doing more of the hunter stuff. But yeah, I think moving from that to the stock breed world was less terrifying than if I had done it the other way around because I'd already gone into the full shock side of things.
Okay, yeah, true.
The stock breed world made a little bit more sense to me.
That's good. It's amazing. I've been showing horses literally since I was 3 years old. And to go to something that's so similar, okay, it's a horse show. I'm just going to another horse show, right? But it could not be more different. The way it is run, the way it's organized, the tack trunks, like you said, just everything is set up so differently. And it's still shock and awe. Like, how can something so much the same be so entirely different?
It's so similar, yet so foreign.
Right. Did they make you rebraid your horse's mane every night?
Oh, yeah. That was part of the bill. And that's why we didn't last real long, because I could not braid enough tails to justify my manes. Because if anyone that knows me, I can braid a tail pretty quick and do a decent job. You don't want me to braid your horse's mane. I'm going to charge you $200 and it's going to be the worst set of braids you've ever seen.
Yeah. And for our listeners that don't understand what we're talking about, the hunter jumper people, God bless them, rebraid their horses every night. So when they're done showing, they take those braids out and then they pay again to have their horses rebraided, which if you're in our stock horse world, you know, you braid that horse. I mean, we're at the Piddle World, right? You braid that horse Sunday night and those braids are in there until Friday night. We wouldn't dream of taking them out. No way.
Unless we have a day in between or a day off or something where they can just be feral and fuzzy, we always leave ours in.
I know. It's just the craziest concept to me. So, okay, as an assistant trainer now, and I don't want to put you in a situation where it sounds like you're looking to leave or anything, but tell me about some of your goals going forward.
I'm really enjoying things right now. I want to keep working forward on kind of like we did this last year, trying new things like the versatility challenge or working toward more of those big wins, big client wins. I love it when I get to watch my clients go on and do something. My youth client will never let me live it down. The day that I was bawling profusely when she was reserve in the Western Riding. And we were all bawling, except for her. And she couldn't understand why we were crying. We're like, you don't understand. But just stuff like that. And keep learning. I want to keep learning from everyone. You can learn something from everyone. Sometimes it's what not to do, but you can learn something from everyone.
You've listened to me talk to my children. I see that all the time. I'm like, you can learn something from everyone. And sometimes it is what not to do. So I love talking to everybody. I love hearing everyone's philosophy. I just love to learn about horses and showing. And sometimes, yeah, like you'll run into something and you'll be like, no, that doesn't work for me. And that's okay. And it might just work just fine for somebody else, but it doesn't have to work for you. So yeah, I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated with learning constantly.
I don't remember the first time I heard this or who even said it to me, but I was at a show somewhere and whoever it was said, we were just talking, walking to the pen. It was a schooling day. It was a day in between a double run show. And they said, I'm going to just go be a mechanic today. And I kind of stopped and thought about it. And then I asked again, what do you mean by being a mechanic? Well, I'm just going to go play with some things, play with some parts and see what I have right now. We're not going to push too hard. We're not going to do too much. I just want to make sure I have the little things I feel like I need right now. And that has always stuck with me. And that was one of those, like I say, I don't remember who said it to me. And I feel bad that I don't because I'd love to quote them. But it's that learn from everyone because that changed my whole approach that day because I went out with all of mine and thought about, okay, like, what do I have here? What can I move? What can't I move? What really is important right now? Or do we just need to go hack around for a while and pet them on the neck, give them a cookie and be done for the day?
Right. Yeah. What a cool concept. I love that. Do you have any particular goals personally this show season?
I mean, I would always love to have my clients win and be at the top end of big shows. But my main goals right now, we have a lot of young horses. And I would love to start getting them in the pen, getting them ready, getting them broke, kind of go through that initial. We're kind of going through a changing of the guard right now with similar clients, but everybody's getting new horses. And we always have the fresh halter babies. And I would love to be able to get everybody off on the right foot, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I would absolutely love to get my judge's card at some point. So I've been studying toward that. We'll see if it ever actually happens with all my spare time.
Right. Yes. I sort of want to get mine too. And so, but yeah, I'm thinking, when the heck do I have time to do that?
Exactly.
So let's talk about APHA. That's kind of where you and I connect a little bit. You're at the paint shows. I'm at the paint shows. They just introduced a new program this weekend. It's a proposed program, incentive fund program, where you would pay $2 per entry. So you have to clarify that that's if four judges, one class, that's four entries. You got to pay the extra $2. Everybody will pay it. And then it will pay out what they're estimating to be $10 per point for youth and amateur exhibitors only. So I know you had mentioned to me in a message this weekend that you had seen that or there was a comment or something. How do you feel about that?
I love the idea in theory. But I'm afraid just adding more fees to things is going to keep our numbers falling.
Yeah.
because as we have talked about in the past, it's really hard to find numbers, especially for your specialized classes, unless you go to the majors and run up and down the road constantly.
Yeah. In our case, we showed all over last year and we'll haul all the way. We'll go to Kentucky. And you know what happens in Kentucky? It's me and it's Heather Brower's kids. Heather Brower lives down the street from me. We could have had a horse show at her house, but we're driving all over because the youth numbers are not very good. I love the intent behind the idea. We're trying to pay people back a little bit, but I just wonder if they did the math. Did they do the math on this? Because I ran some quick numbers and it didn't pay me back for my 13 and under kid for sure, because there's no 13 under. I would like to see them offer free 13 and under entries for the year. I would love that because they need it. And this is, you need to grow programs. Those kids are going to grow through the programs. They move to the 14 to 18. They move to the amateur, hopefully. But yeah, I think the new people coming in, just see how much money that's going to cost them, because only a couple people end up with the points.
Absolutely. And I think, I don't know what the answer is, and I don't proclaim to have the magic wand that will fix it. All I know is that we need to be bringing kids in and feed the pipeline to become an amateur or to have more kids even just while they're a youth. And then maybe they never want to do it again, but they have those memories and we all have those experiences, because if we don't, then we're not going to have an industry. And I look at it from the perspective in my personal position, this is how I feed my family. It's your hobby. So how do I make your hobby fun enough that you still want to send me your horse and we can go do things? Even if it's just for a catch ride, even if it's just for a lesson or a clinic or whatever, we need to be able to bring people in. And I don't think raising the fees is going to help anything.
Yeah, I very much agree. So no, I don't pretend to know the answers either. I have a few ideas, my free entry idea for one. But yeah, we have to look at, I think they're looking at rewarding people, which is great. But I think the only people reaping the rewards are the people at the top already, who frankly, financially, probably don't need the paybacks as much as the people just trying to come to their first paint show. You know, coming to a breed show is a big step for a lot of people. And part of that big step is the financial cost. We're blessed in Michigan with a very healthy open show program. You go to any given weekend during April to September in Michigan, I have my choice of good quality, well-run open shows in the state. My choice, not even just one. And they cost almost nothing compared to like a breed show where I'm going to spend at least $1,000 for the weekend and I can go to the open show and spend $250. And that's without winning any money back. And I might win money back and pay even less. So we have to bridge that gap somehow. And again, I don't know the answers, but I just think the new program, I just really wonder, like, did you talk? I wish they would talk to me. I wish they would talk to people like me who are paying the bills. You know, I know those kind of one percenters are always sort of in with the guys running the show, but you need to talk to people who are just coming into the industry or maybe haven't come in yet and really interview them versus, hey, we have this cool thought. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, yeah, it is kind of cool, but here's the problems with it. Did you talk to anybody? Somebody had to point this out to you, right?
Absolutely. Well, and the hard part there too is I stand by this to this day. I've been on both sides of the financials because I've been on a couple different boards. I'm still on the Utah Paint Horse Club board. Your one trick ponies pay for your horse show, but you need to keep your all arounders, your all around ranch horses and all that other stuff going too at a reasonable rate. Because if you don't, then you're not going to have a show. But we pay the same fee for our halter horses or our reiners that maybe show once or twice at that week-long show, as opposed to the all-arounders that show every day on your stall, on your feed, on everything. And like I say, I don't know what the right answer is, but I feel like we need to, like you said, just figure out a way to bring people in without costing more money. Because that initial jump, like you say, from the open show circuit or 4-H or whatever to the breed show circuit is a big expense. I learned how to band horses so that I could do it. And I remember many sleepless nights so that I could pay my show bill.
Yeah, same here. Do you see any difference because we do the quarter shows, you do the paint shows. Do you do any other like breed shows, like a ranch club organization or anything?
We don't. We show all of our ranch horses through the breed associations right now. Not to say that we wouldn't, but as things have gone, we've just been showing the quarter and the paint. And usually our Appaloosa shows out here are combined with a quarter or paint show.
Okay, that's interesting. So do you see any big differences between quarter and paint as far as enrollment? I feel like I see a lot better numbers than quarter horse right now in the youth.
At the majors, everything is still major. At the weekend four judge level, per se, like your average four judge weekend horse show that's 3-4 days, it seems to be about the same for us on both sides. And that's why I say I don't know that it's necessarily a breed-specific thing. I think it's our industry. And I don't know what the answer is, but we're going to have to figure out a way to bring kids in or we're not going to have shows.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of funny we're talking about this now, but tomorrow, Regina and Lynn and I are interviewing somebody kind of about this exact topic too, about entry points into the horse show world and then the upper echelon of it being the breed shows. So kind of interesting to touch base on it today. Well, I am so glad that we got to do this. Our listeners don't know, this is our second recording because our first one didn't work, but I loved hearing your story again and look forward to seeing you down the road. I'm very excited for you. You've had such a successful career already. And just wrap us up with anything else, any other little tidbits of wisdom from our assistant trainer today.
Anyone looking to do this, I can give you a quote from Will and Grace. The first three letters in assistant spell ass, so get off yours. It's not always glamorous. It's not always fun. Sometimes you're going to be cleaning stalls at 2 a.m. Sometimes you're going to get to go to bed at 7. But if you really do love it, jump headfirst into it and get all the way in and really try everything you can. And even if you don't like it, then you learned you didn't like that. Or it's the same as learning from anybody and everybody. Sometimes you learn that this isn't for you. But if you don't give it your whole heart and try truly, then you'll never know.
And sometimes you get handed that world champion buckle, right?
Exactly. Sometimes it all works out. Sometimes it doesn't. Some days you're the windshield. Some days you're the bug. But those windshield days are worth it.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Colton. It was so great hearing from you today.
Thank you.
So that's our story this week. Thanks so much for joining us. We will see you again right here next Monday.